The American dream has become a nightmare. Signs of the time are on cardboard, on corners in town. Like a cancer that's silently spreading, there's an unspoken fear. We're on our way down. We must take America back. Main Street to Wall Street, cities and states, Washington, D.C. Before it's too late, there's not long. We need leaders who lead us, not stick us and bleed us, then ransom our future and our children's, that's wrong. We must take America back as liberty weeps, our forefathers spin in their graves. Pray God will bless some way out of this mess. We must take America back.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is the National Intel Report. I'm your host, John Stadtmuller, with you on this Friday, 22nd day of December 2017. Just three more days shopping till Christmas. That is, if you have any money out there, Mr. and Mrs. Middle Class America. On today's program, I mentioned this yesterday, that I was going to have Michael Steger on, and he's part of the LaRouche Pack. I've had contact with these people over the years. And, of course, years ago, we had the Executive Intelligence Review program on Republic Radio International. So it goes back a few years. Michael, are you there, sir?
Yeah, hi. How are you?
Good. Good. Doing fine.
Great.
You recently wrote an article here about the awakening of the true America. You know, who are the clue? There's been so much. Let me backtrack here. Let me set this up properly. We have had nonstop babble from the mainstream media to confound and confuse, to obfuscate, to hide, to lie over the last year about the Russiagate, the collusion with Donald Trump and Russia to overthrow Hillary's campaign, all of which this has turned out to be total bunk. We still have Mueller at the FBI. Comey's out of a job. I guess if they do another Star Wars and they bring the Wookiee back, he can star in that role.
Right.
They have that. By the way, if you haven't noticed, Michael, they have the same knee contact. It's like their knees bow in. They actually touch. So every time I see that, I think of the Wookiee. At any rate, he can't help he was born that way, but he sure could help how he conducted himself in office. And this appears to be a carefully coordinated political attack. But as I said, the majority, if not all of this, has been debunked. But I tuned into MSNBC this morning, and lo and behold, they're still on the same tact. They're, Donald Trump, Russiagate, woe is us, and how do we get this guy out of office? Have you ever seen anything in the political arena like this before?
Well, I mean, I think there's two ways to answer that question. One is to say absolutely not. This is an unprecedented exposure of clearly what is an intended coup. And I think it's important just to be clear on this. The idea of Russian collusion, where did it start? The head of British intelligence, a guy named Robert Hannigan over at GCHQ, it's basically like the Brits NSA, started communications with the top level of U.S. intelligence, that is John Brennan, James Clapper, possibly Comey. But the FBI could be just the henchman in this whole operation. But direct communications with guys like John Brennan for 6 months, beginning in December of 2015, long before there's any Fusion GPS hiring by the Democratic law firm Perkins Coie long before they hire Christopher Steele, though Christopher Steele obviously is British intelligence. But Hannigan starts this story. Now, if they start the story, he apparently wrote memos to U.S. intelligence for 6 months, and then in June or July, one of those two, of 2016, he actually comes and meets with John Brennan directly. Now, they clearly think they had some evidence, but I'll tell you, this is typical espionage against a threat to the current establishment's policies. That's what was being done against Trump. It was instigated by the British. And I think for one thing Americans are starting to wake up to is, guess what? This is pretty much what politics has been like. The Pollyanna politics most people have thought they were living with was probably not really the case. And we can go back and look at various cases of why was Ronald Reagan nearly shot within 100 days of his presidency? And we can go back further and look at other instances of where clearly there was an attempt to break a policy change from taking place within the United States, and it's also happened within other countries. But to, you know, and people that study history, and some of your listeners certainly may, they know that this is actually what history often looks like. But for the first time, perhaps, it is in broad daylight for the American people. And let's be honest, the Democrats, the left-wing media, mainstream media, and the coup plotters, the FBI, the McCabes, and the Comeys, and even the Mueller's and his whole team, they're increasingly panicked. They don't have much. They've gotten their easy indictments, what we knew. Flynn had lied. We knew that a year ago, practically. We knew Manafort was tied up with this Ukraine stuff more than a year ago. And what Manafort was doing, everybody in Washington, D.C. is probably doing. That means getting money from, you know, people outside the United States. And what Flynn did, I mean, we know the entire cast of characters around Hillary Clinton lied to the FBI. Many other people have never been indicted.
That the FBI is the ones that instructed Hillary Clinton to destroy her servers.
Right, and actually destroyed some of the material. So clearly they've got their easy indictments. Mueller probably doesn't have much left. I think they're panicked. They're trying to bait Trump to fire Mueller, which is a little bit pathetic. You see a pathetic nature to this, as you know, you mentioned earlier. But I think this is what politics actually looks like. And what's important is let's not just look at it from the standpoint of a power play, right? They could say they didn't want to lose power to Donald Trump's faction. That's not what's happening here. Donald Trump doesn't represent a power faction inside the United States or the transatlantic world the way Obama and the Bushes and Hillary Clinton represented. What Donald Trump represents is an American reflex that has always pushed back against this kind of transatlantic British London program. Let's not forget it was Tony Blair who was the big the guy that really pushed the intelligence on the Iraq war.
Sure it was.
And so, you know, we've run into this problem a number of times. So the point for a lot of the Americans to look at is there's a question of real policy here. And if more Americans can not only see what's unfolding and realize, boy, Trump's really hated by the people who have been running this country for the last 20 years, if not more. What's the policy? And I think that we've got to get more Americans looking at the policy question of what the economic policy is for this country and for the world, because that's really what the fight's about.
Well, and I was talking to one of your cohorts, Gerald, and I said, you know, it's just a campaign slogan, make America great again. Now, Trump, I noticed what Trump did as far as the economy goes, that he's backed off of the penalty for corporations if they continue to manufacture and send into this country. I think he at one point said 35% tariff, right, on any imported products. Well, and this big tax thing, I was watching the markets today. The markets didn't react all that well to the newly passed Trump tax plan that happens to be, I think, what did they say? Is it 7 billion words long? It's huge. And the corporations, they got their wish from 35% to 21%. But the corporations, a lot of them never paid taxes because they had their tax attorneys. They knew the loopholes. A lot of them created the loopholes which they could jump through. And I'm looking at this whole thing, and I'm going, you know, this is great theater, but what is this actually going to accomplish? Half of the people in this country right now, Michael, are not paying income taxes. In order to get these deductions, guess what you have to do? You have to file. So I see this not as the great stimulus plan that everybody is predicting that it will be. Trump himself said it was even greater than Ronald Reagan's back in 1986, I think it was. But, you know, I'm looking at the Trump policies, and as I said to Gerald, I said, we've got a major flaw in this grand plan. We have a debt monetary system, and we're choked to death with debt.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, we almost saw the end of the industrialized world back in 2008.
Yeah.
When that Glass-Steagall thing was put aside, we let the commercial lenders come into the market and start speculating, and we know what happened after that. They created over $1 quadrillion in debt. Nobody's ever been charged. Nobody's gone to jail for the largest scam ever witnessed by humankind. So Trump, you know, I'm giving the guy some leeway here, but he's working with a bunch of broke tinker toys, and I don't know what it's going to look like once he gets something built here.
Yeah, well, I think there's a couple of precedents, and I think in the modern period that we have to look at how this is going to function, and then, you know, you go back to the most clear American precedent, which takes us back a little bit further, and that's Franklin Roosevelt. Now, he's been given a bad name, but you look at the industrial policy, the scientific policy, you look at the restrictions and regulations, the simple ones, like Glass-Steagall, like you mentioned. He put Glass-Steagall forward, regulated Wall Street, and opened up a line of credit for electricity for the farmers, for industry, for the hydroelectric plants of the Tennessee Valley Authority. That specifically direction of economic development is really the engine of the United States. And it was under Lincoln with the railroad systems, with the ag schools like the state universities throughout the Midwest. That kind of policy, as it was for Hamilton, going back to Washington's presidency, the Erie Canal, and moving into this area of the Great Lakes. Those things, that built up New York, and it built up the entire Midwest as an industrial base. That's the same thing FDR did. Now, Trump can do that. The problem is, as you just mentioned, look, he's got people like Steve Mnuchin in there who represents a direct Wall Street tie. There's really no commitment from the Wall Street grouping or Goldman Sachs, which dominates the political arena, towards the average American, their wages, their standard of living. If there was, we wouldn't see hyperinflation with massive money printing now for 30 years. The money printing has been going on for 30 years in this country since the 87 stock market crash, and they've never stopped, and it's just gotten bigger and bigger and bigger. Now, there's two examples. One is you're going to have to clean out this kind of financial oligarchy in the United States. Now, the similar problem was faced by Vladimir Putin. When he came into the presidency of Russia, that country was really torn to pieces. And he had to confront a similar set of oligarchs. So there was a policy he had to take. Now, to this day, there has not been adopted in Russia a coherent policy of economic development. They're still based on exporting natural gas and raw materials and this kind of thing. Trump's got to deal with this financial oligarchy. And the cleanest way is Glass-Steagall. And it is then adopting a public credit system the way Roosevelt and Hamilton really shaped. Hamilton created this whole perspective. And we launch a development program. The only country on the planet in the last 20 years who has done that has been China. And one thing we know, if anyone knows China, 25 years ago, China was still run by bicycles. And today they are a modern and advanced industrial nation across the board in transit, increasingly power supply. Their high-speed rail systems are the best in the world. They're moving on to space exploration. They've got a nuclear program they're moving towards in terms of energy supply. So this, and they developed very clear. They adopted Glass-Steagall the way FDR did. They adopted Hamilton's credit system. They set up banks to lend to big industry and development. Now, the interesting thing is that this has nothing to do. This is not saying that you have to have a communist system. It's actually called the American system. And the Chinese were just smart enough, you know, they take the best of any country.
Well,
they saw this works. And yeah. I think we've got to look at how we can do that in the United States. Yeah, and Trump's going to have to deal with it.
It didn't start out as being the American system. This is what was adopted.
Right.
And Michael, I don't want to seem to rub you the wrong way here, but, you know, this is the system of capitalism. And that term is associated generally with using the interest moneyed individuals' right. receipts out there. Right. And this is our problem. You know, no matter how you look at this, no matter how well it's managed, no economy on the face of this planet on a paper currency such as been created has ever survived more than 100 years. Well, this one has, and it's simply because they keep printing the money and they keep giving it to the bankers. Otherwise, right. the system would have collapsed a long time ago. And it should have. In 2008, when we had this banking crisis, those too big to fail, in a pig's eye, these are the ones that created the problem in the first place or had a great hand in creating that problem.
Yeah.
So we're trying to make a Rolls-Royce out of what's left out of a 62 Volkswagen Beetle, and it ain't going to work. Now, they can prolong it. They can improve the economy. I do agree. But if I'm listening to my government, and I believe it or not, Michael, gosh, before I die, I would like to listen to somebody within the government move their lips and speak something of the truth.
Yeah.
I really would. But yeah, sure. the system that we have right now, it is not sustainable. It will eat itself. They could stretch it out a while longer. But it's not going to work. The fatal flaw in this is the gangsters to begin with in that system. So moving forward, anything we do with that, it's like walking a tight wire with on one leg. You know, how much can you hop and how much can you balance at the same time?
Well, and that's the interesting thing. I would conjecture that had Hillary Clinton won, that the stock market probably would have collapsed before she even took office. And the reason I say that is this. And you can see it. Here's a reason why I might say that. The hedge funds in Connecticut are going under, and the state of Connecticut's revenues are collapsing because they shorted the market. They shorted the system heavily. Because from people on the inside, they know that this is a massive bubble. They know it's not substantiated, and they know their main goal is to maintain the political power to dump the bankruptcy and worthless debt onto the taxpayers, onto the population, and write it off their books, like they did in 2007-08. They need to do it again. They did the same thing in the late 90s. Practically every 10 years since the bailout started in 87, we've had a crash where they've practically done the same thing. Now, and so that what my point is this, is that they wanted to do it, so and Obama would have done it, and Hillary Clinton would have had to adopt it, and it would have been ushered in as a policy, which would have really been the very reason why they set up the police state apparatus in the first place. Why did the FBI become so corrupt under Mueller and then his protege Comey?
Michael, I got a news flash for you here. the FBI has never been solid. J. Edgar. Was a cross-dressing, paranoid fanatic that kept dossiers and files on everybody for blackmail. This thing was born out of hell to begin with. And what fascinates me, we have a little problem here. We had Mr. Comey that seemed to be a tad bit political and covering up. And then, you know, Mr. Mueller was, one of the top dogs in the FBI. And I'm hearing this mantra repeated over and over and over again in the media that, you know, the tens of thousands of FBI agents, you know, they're all good people. It's just the top that's a little crusty. Well, within my lifetime, I've witnessed what the FBI has done. And this is an agency that I believe, and it's not constitutional, go find the FBI in your constitution. This is an administrative office with the ability to point guns and badges, and they have very, very often to the detriment of us. At any rate, Michael Steger, hang on. We're going to take this three-minute break. We'll be right back.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
No one can say what we all must outrun. Who's gonna carry the weight of the world until we learn to stop and do what must be done?
We are back talking to Michael Stegner, or Steger, rather. I keep wanting to put an N in there, Michael. Sorry about that.
Okay.
And we're talking about the economic policy, I guess we could say, moving forward. And I would like to get around to, since we're only, I only have you here for this hour.
Yeah.
I would like to get around to the gestalt, if you will, the overview of this whole Trump collusion, Democratic Party thing. Take us back and put this in a timeline, because people literally, Michael, have been burned out. They have been given information that has been proven totally false, and they're still out there repeating it. And everybody's got a different take on this as to why, whom, who did what, for what reasons, the motivations of the, I guess it's an uncrime, if you want to get 1984-ish. So take us back.
Okay, yeah, I think we've got it. We've got to situate it on two levels, and that's one is the economic policy that is really critical, which is a program of development for the United States. But you got to look at the way that this thing is orchestrated. The current system is enforced by a British intelligence network. That's basically what the FBI is. That's what Teddy Roosevelt and Charles Bonaparte, his attorney general, set up in 1905. Was essentially a British-modeled kind of federal police force. These guys are there to enforce a financial system. They're there to enforce a system of debt. And that's what you've got in the United States. That's what the bailouts have been, and it's been enforced. That's what 9/11 was. So when Trump started running, and he was running to upset this post-9/11 period, police force, ongoing external wars, the ongoing constant bailouts, ongoing drug addiction and opioid crisis that the FBI hasn't done much about.
Well, and you know, it's really fascinating. Just as a little side note here, I mentioned this yesterday on the program. McKesson, which is the country's leading drug distributor from all the drug manufacturers, whether continental United States or foreign, doesn't matter. And McKesson, what they have been doing is filling orders and shipping drugs to places that didn't even, if everybody took an OxyContin pill one a day for an entire year, as small populations, the shipments far exceed what would reasonably be demanded, more set probably for a big metropolitan area than some tiny little city out in Colorado. The FBI has been selective on who they're looking at and where these drugs are coming from. We now have a crackdown on MS-13. Well, the damn border's been standing open all this while. They simply came in from Honduras, walked across our southern border, went to all our major metropolitan cities, and went about setting up a network of drug distribution. This is not a small feat. This just didn't happen overnight.
Oh, no.
So,
well, we wrote the book. You know, just real quick, we wrote the book on this. We put out a book in 1970s, Dope Incorporated. And the inspiration for that book was the point you're making right now. The guys in the DEA back then said, you guys know it from an economic side, so let me ask you a question. Maybe you guys can figure it out. Why is it that on a black market, where you'd think the so-called laws of supply and demand would be the most predominant for each local region, why is it that a dime bag is a dime bag is a dime bag from Bangkok to Moscow to Paris to New York to Mexico City? Why is it always the same? And what we found is that it's an international cartel with the international banks at the top. We know Wells Fargo, Wachovia, the other banks were directly involved, HSBC. So this kind of thing is an internationally orchestrated policy, but the FBI, under guys like Eric Holder, under Mueller and Comey, let these things happen. Look, Mueller was the guy. Mueller's the very guy that targeted the LaRouche organization on behalf of this international cartel, this British kind of syndicate. Mueller targeted our organization in the 80s to shut it down, to break it up. Then Mueller was brought in 3 days after 9/11. To ensure that the real story of 9/11 was not uncovered. And then Mueller today is deployed to enforce this coup, the 9/11 coup, which was a coup against our constitutional system, to enforce it and to basically remove that which threatened it, that is Donald Trump.
Well,
and that's where we stand today.
Yeah, well, and I know the corruption within the FBI. I know that. Very, very well. I've been tracking and tracing that for 25 years. We also have their little counterpart. Supposedly the FBI works CONUS and the CIA works offshore. Well, no, not really. They're interchangeable as piston rods in a V8 engine. But, you know, I look at this, Michael, and I see these agencies. Now, if we've got a straight-up Department of Justice, we have an attorney general. We have an assistant attorney general. These are the people that are supposed to be untouched by politics no matter who puts them in office, whoever gets them assigned. A president should be very careful that his stuff is straight before he even thinks about going into the POTUS seat. But, you know, let the chips fall where they may. If we had a Department of Justice that was actually doing its job, it appears to me that the DOJ is stalling or possibly covering. Now, when we get back, I want you to continue with this, but I've got a few of my own ideas here on why this coalition is continuing.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Do you worry a lot? If you're forgetful, nervous, moody, or overwhelmed, chances are you're not protecting yourself from the ravaging effects of stress and anxiety. No matter the cause, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, your quality of life, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in as little as 1 to 2 weeks and increase your ability to recall facts, names, and numbers in 4 to 12 weeks. Calm and Clever was created by scientist Kurt Hendricks, a principal investigator in 2 NIH-funded studies on Alzheimer's disease. Try Calm and Clever for 2 months. You'll feel the difference. Call 1-800-758-8746 or go to calmandclever.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com. Educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product, and I recommend it to everyone. Great product! It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s. Along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Some say life will beat you down, break your heart, steal your crown. So it started out.
All right, we are back talking with Michael Steger over at EIR, and we're talking about the Trump trap here. Now, quickly,
sounds like a Christmas movie.
It does, doesn't it? It sounds like Chevy Chase should knock off 20 years and do another movie. Yeah. but Michael, let's go back here. You know, and part of what I'm seeing now, that this wasn't just something that was concocted just for Donald Trump. There's a guy by the name of Smith that wrote that. You know, this was cooked up about 10 years ago. It was under the Obama administration. They just took it off the shelf, blew the dust off it, plugged it in, and went after went after Trump over it. But the problem here is that we've got these agencies that are acting extra politically and obviously extra constitutionally, and we have a Department of Justice that seems to be mired or... I don't know if they're intimidated. What I see, if we wanted to break this whole thing loose, you know, let's not go after the little guy. Who in the FBI can we throw under the bus to help make this go away?
Right.
Who and what other agency or politician can we throw under the bus to maybe satiate the American people's pissosity level? And they're pissed. You know, we have a 15% approval rating right now of Congress. I think that's the lowest it's ever been. So the American people are sitting back and they're watching this. They don't totally trust Trump, but they you pointed out earlier, they know one thing that they didn't want, and that was a piano-legged lesbian in there as president of the United States. I mean, they weren't going to have that. Yeah. So we had Donald Trump. And Donald Trump didn't create the new face of the Republican Party. It was actually the people and Steve Bannon that created it. These were the people that knew what's wrong with America, and believe it or not, Michael, some of them are actually awake and paying attention, and they saw the problems. You know, we're told by even Trump himself, you know, the unemployment rate is way down, the economy's doing great, look at the stock market. Well, I know why the stock market's as high as it is. You know, they're buying up all their stock. They're socking money away like it's nobody's business. The banks themselves are repeating the same thing that they did in the last depression, which happened to last about almost 11 years until we found ourselves in World War I Part II. Then all of a sudden there was all kinds of credit available from the banks to fire up the war machine and let's go kill a few million people here and there. Mm-hmm. So I see this systemic problem just not over a political issue or over one period of political time in this country. We've got some underlying crud here that needs to be flushed. Otherwise, and I can say this no other way, Michael, we're screwed permanently.
Yeah. Well, I think we're in a better position right now than we certainly could have been. I think many people know that if Hillary Clinton would have been elected, it would have been just we're not sure what would have survived given the condition of things. The problem is that we're going to have to keep moving forward. We've got to make some major changes. But the process is moving. The fact that we've got an awareness of this coup, but you're right, it's got to move up. It's got to move up the ladder. You've got to look at not just the intelligence agencies. You've got to look at the Obama policy. For example, let's take this Russia question because I think this is important. Who wrote the January 6th intelligence assessment that was really with no documented proof anyways, but who wrote it and submitted it to say that Russia even was involved in the election? Because we've seen no proof. This whole Russia scare that Obama's been trying to blow up really since the election on an escalated level. But you could go back to the Ukraine where we had our State Department spent $5 billion U.S. dollars on supporting a fascist coup in Ukraine. And these are Nazis. I mean, it was bad.
Yeah.
So this whole Russia policy was a big factor. And the question is this, it's clear, when the U.S. and Russia work together on strategic problems like terrorism, it works well. Look at what China's doing. Trump has been very open with China. China is now planning to invest $84 billion into West Virginia for a major development, not of extraction of natural resources. They're going to develop manufacturing capabilities for things like polyethylenes, plastics within West Virginia. And it's going to make West Virginia, it's going to revive all of West Virginia's economy over the coming 5-10 years. This is real life, real hope. Now, here's an interesting irony. $84 billion over 20 years. They're not asking for any ownership. They're not even getting tax breaks in this investment.
Then what would their... Okay, let me stop you right here because the question is already popping into my head. What's their motivation in doing this? Because they think the United States is so great?
Well, what they said, which I think is partially believable, Trump said we've got to balance out the trade imbalance. So they figure, look, this is a legitimate investment. We're going to get... I'm sure they get something in return for the process, but it's largely probably access or discounted prices or something. I'm sure they get something as they work it out. But the investment is it's an investment. It's not ownership. And the thing is that I guess they get the political benefits of balancing the trade out with Trump, which can be obviously useful. But here's the interesting point I want to make on this. $84 billion invested over 20 years can resurrect the economy of West Virginia, 5 million people, but a critical part, it's going to affect Pennsylvania, Ohio, Kentucky. But here's the thing. We were providing the Federal Reserve, I think around 2012, the Federal Reserve was providing Wall Street, $80 billion a month to Wall Street banks. Why can't we provide the credit instead of the $7 trillion for the wars and the $10 trillion for the Wall Street bailouts? Why aren't we able to provide that for the kind of manufacturing industry for these states over not just per month, but over 10, 20-year investments. It's unfathomable that the American people and our political system will accept this kind of – we can't do anything like that. That's the Federal Reserve to decide. Are we crazy?
Well, and I find this interesting now that you bring up that point, that the banks will loan each other money at zero interest. And this whole thing, this whole onus of this 2008 supposed banking crisis, that's put directly on the backs of the American taxpayer. Period. There is no way around this. And these magnificent bankers, I mean, what about a little, you know, a little pat on the head and a little thank you with a wink wink here that maybe we'll make some loans available to the public at zero interest? No, that's never going to happen because the juice is running on this entire thing.
Right.
That's what they are. They're the middle people. They bring.
Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's be honest. If you look at what a loan means at 1% to 2% versus what the banks are providing via credit cards at 18%, but say they did loans at 8% or 10%, 8% or 10% versus, say, 1.5%, 8% versus 1.5%. If you're talking about a mortgage-like loan, say you want to build up, say we want to build a high-speed rail system in the United States, say we would find it useful to start connecting a lot of the cities on the eastern seaboard in the Midwest, down into the south in Texas, through St. Louis, and some of the cities on the West Coast. Say we wanted to do that, and we build all the manufacturing in the United States, and we did a loan for 40 years to do it. We created some credit. We created a national bank, or we even got it from Wall Street. If you did it at 1.5% versus doing it at 8%, you're talking at like 1,000 times the difference in payback money. It's like 1,000 times the difference in how much you're going to pay back. That's the Wall Street system. You can't build up the nation on an 8 or 10% borrowing rate. You have to have it lower. How do you think China did it? China's banks loan at 1.5% because they're not looking for the massive financial profits. They want to see a physical, productive advancement. And that's what we've got to get back to in the United States. And that's what Donald Trump right now threatens. He hasn't gone with it completely, but he threatens that. And I'm telling you, the Wall Street, London bankers, the people that enforce this system and the FBI, they smell that threat. And that's why they think they have to bring him down.
Well, and I've sat with a particular interest, with bated breath, watching to see who Trump was going to pick as VP. And I'll be honest with you, Michael, this guy, in the traditional sense of being a Republican, I think he's hated within his own state.
Yeah, he wasn't going to win. That's why he was willing to jump on what they thought was a losing campaign, because he had nothing to lose.
And if you look at the state that he came from, my God in heaven, I mean, that state is in serious trouble. But,
yeah.
You know, I'm seeing Pence as the cutout to be plopped in that seat if something happens to Donald. And I suggested to Gerald, by the way, I was talking with him yesterday, I said, Franklin Delano, by the way, his real name was Roosevelt, that guy from New York, very tight with the bankers. This guy came in and he was president for what, going on 3 terms, and then he died in office. Mr. Roosevelt, that's a subject of discussion for another day. But I look at what has been happening overall, and if Trump has been informed enough, as I think that he has been, he's got a rudimentary understanding of things. No, he's not a politician. Politicians don't tweet. They don't shoot from the hip. Candidates might, and they might get away with that, trying to seek office. But once in office, you're expected to function and, well, operate and say and walk and talk a certain way. Well, Trump is not a politician. He was neither Democrat nor Republican. I wouldn't even consider him to be an independent. I do think that he did give a damn, and I think that's why he sought the office of the presidency. But I suggested to Gerald that if Trump has, rather than trying to allow the media to pick apart every sentence, every punctuation, flip-flop, turn it upside down, shake it, see what falls out, and if it doesn't, they just make it up and throw it back in there. If he really was serious about going directly to the American people, I would do a fireside chat type of scenario.
Yeah.
Once or twice a month, 30 minutes, commercially uninterrupted on major networks, and go directly to the American people. And if he has an agenda, and he's just not, this is not just knee-jerk reactions to, you know, the days going on, or the public pressures, or the political pressures, or policy, or economic, you know, pick a category, we're in a lot of trouble in a lot of different areas.
Yeah.
But if Trump really wanted to, and he was serious about straightening this country out, and I do not doubt, not for a moment, Michael, that many people, even say in terms of sending out a wet team after the guy, they'd like to see him gone, most assuredly. He's not their kind of guy, not their cup of tea. But if I was Donald Trump, I would go into an underground facility. I would be a gopher for 2-3 years. I would do my bi-monthly addresses. I would run my White House. I'd certainly clean out my staff because he still has problems there. But his agenda as president of the United States could be carried out pretty much unhindered if he was really serious about doing this. He might have to dive down a rabbit hole to do it rather than be walking around. Because if in this world today, and just ask John Kennedy, just ask Abe Lincoln, if they want you gone, you will be gone.
Yes, it's a valid point. I mean, I think the big difference between FDR and Trump, I think you're right, Trump's got good instincts. The ultimate difference is the Roosevelt had 4 years of preparation as governor in New York State, where he pulled together his team of Harry Hopkins and the others.
Mm-hmm.
When they came in, they set up the card tables and they got to work, and they knew exactly how they wanted it. How they wanted to get things moving. Not everything they did was right or worked great, but they had a real agenda, and he had a team. I mean, Steve Mnuchin's not part of the team. Trump has no team. The bigger difference also is this. Roosevelt came in with the economy just squandered off of a financial collapse that took place a few years earlier. That's what we had when Obama came in. I mean, this crisis started summer of 2007. So by the time Obama came in, it was an FDR-like moment. And, of course, that's why they made sure Obama got in there. The difference with Trump is that, you know, they're kind of hanging this so-called stock market rise, I think, as a way to trap him and to get him to own it, which is somewhat obvious. And I think the question is, how do you navigate that? Because you know the system's going to snap, and they're going to try to blame you. I think it may even snap in September, October to try to squander the Republican, any kind of Republican maintaining control over Congress.
Well, we understand who has the ultimate power in this country. We understand it. We know who runs this country, and that is the Federal Reserve and the funny money people. So, having said that, you know, we have a problem here that they could collapse the economy at any given moment. And what I'm starting to question is why this system has not collapsed, and what are they trying to do in the future? The only indication I have at this is that this fiat system that has been built and milked for all of its worth, they want to transition us to a digital currency. That's what I think Bitcoin was about, and all these cryptocurrencies. We were given debit cards. We were given pieces of plastic. Here you go. Money and treasury is a real pain in the butt. You have to replace it, and it's just dirty, and you get germs off of it, and it's just, you know, it's just too much. Let's just go digital. This would work to the benefit of the government, the taxing agencies, that digitally they can go in, boom, they'd have access to your accounts. They wouldn't miss a penny. And I think that's why the only reason why this thing is still standing, because I kept asking the question, okay, we've got a problem here, Houston. And it was brought to light in 2008, and we discovered the reasons why. Okay, so what's the banker's plan B? This is the question I kept asking. And it appears to me that the next step that the banks want to take is into that digital or the cryptocurrency, or at least the cloud-based currency, if you will, just to get rid of the dirty money and to have absolute and total control over the system.
Well, I think But let's be honest, the bankers have the biggest problem they face out of London and Wall Street is the rise of a true physical economy in China, that there's an industrial powerhouse. They don't know what to do. Look, you've got minority governments in Great Britain, in Belgium, in the Netherlands, practically in France. Macron, I mean, they lost the two major parties, and now in Germany. All of northwestern Europe, the core of kind of the financial and economy of Europe, the financial wealth and overall economic wealth of Europe, is now in political chaos and disarray, or on the precipice of it.
That was not an accident, Michael.
No.
You know, a lot of people have the tendency to look at things like this as, oh, it's just politics and mistakes were made. Look, I don't know who in the hell put Merkel into office over in Germany. But for God's sake, she was in the Russian army.
But also look at the Brexit, right? The Brexit was the voice of the population. And I would just say that the reason why these governments are all in minority is because they've been killing their populations there the same way we've been killing our populations here. And the population is now, they're in revolt. We saw it with Brexit. We saw it with Trump's election. You saw it in the Italian constitutional referendum.
And what do you think, Michael, the next step is after this little political whistle stop we've been at?
Well, I think it's a question of can we create an alliance between, say, nations like Russia, China, India, Japan, and the United States, that you move towards a perspective of real physical development. And you create that, one, by the international ties. And then Trump's got to build up a bulwark. He's got to get a group of people in Congress, even bipartisan, that can work on this infrastructure program.
But Michael, we're walking around this big elephant that's been eating our popcorn, drinking our beer, and blocking our TV viewership angles. The globalists themselves, they need the United States to go bye-bye.
They do.
They want them gone. So to have this in the face of the globalist, and I've said this repeatedly, and I'll stick to this to my dying day because I've never seen evidence to the contrary, the bankers are the globalists. They dreamed up this wonderful idea of transnational doing business and dump the laws in any respective country, and we'll just make up this new commerce kind of thing, and we'll all sing Kumbaya and all get along, we'll all get rich. That's not what is going on here.
No.
To have a faction between communist China, and by the way, look, we built China. We gave them most favored nation status. We allowed companies to go over to China. We allowed China to ship goods in here. What was the trade deficits? $100-200 billion a year for how many years?
Yeah.
And we've been building the boogeyman. This is what I said right at the outset. When the Iron Curtain came down, I'm sitting there and I'm watching for the next character to pop up on stage. Then I saw this evolution of China enriching itself at the expense of the United States. And I'm looking at this scenario and I'm going, wait a minute here. I surmise the banker's plan is maybe to go digital and we can salvage that and re-leverage and do whatever we need to do there. Yeah. But geopolitically, no, there's still a problem. This country has to go down for the globalists to win.
Well, that's true, absolutely. And that's the irony, and that's why the question of us teaming up with China, because here's what China did. What the globalists intended was very clear. Remember, they created the BRIC. They created the BRIC, Brazil, Russia, India, China. They created that term as the term of the growing nations that had to be under globalist submission, or what we call British submission. And the reason why is this. Russia was going to be cheap resources. Brazil, cheap agriculture. India, cheap IT labor. And China, cheap manufacturing labor. And up until about the mid-90s, they had China there. They had the heel on the neck on that policy. And you had billionaire communists who were becoming corrupt, degenerate, and China was heading towards back to a warlord-like system that would have brought down the Communist Party at some point. And they made a change. They made a change to say, we've got to clean this out. And the current president has been the strongest so far in rooting out the corruption that came in to move China towards a high-tech, high-quality manufacturing program like Hamilton and Lincoln and FDR created in the United States. That turn flanked the globalists. It flanked them. It outflanked them. It gave Russia a chance to get back up on its haunches and say, we're not going to allow you to continue to create these regime change wars closer and closer to Russia, pushing us towards what would be some type of global conflict, or forcing Russia into submission, balkanizing them, breaking them up. So U.S. ties with Russia and China for a strategic alliance, and at the same time the United States can move towards real physical development, then when this system crashes, we've got an alternative system already in place. And that's what these globalists can't afford. They can't afford for the United States to position itself to immediately transition back to a viable physical system. They've got to have a squandering in chaos and confusion so they can run their political scam during financial chaos. We've got to focus on what's the actual viable solution long term. And if we do what I'm saying here, I think it would work.
Well, and that's using the current current system and modifying it.
It's changing it drastically. I mean, it's changing it. It's throwing out this Federal Reserve Wall Street system. It may not be ending the Federal Reserve right away, but it's ultimately changing it in principle, where you're not measuring it the way we are today, and you're going back to a major production orientation in the United States. I'd say it's like going from monkeys to man.
Well, you mentioned three of my least favorite people in American history: Hamilton, Lincoln, and Roosevelt.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, I mean,
something to talk about.
Yeah, that's for sure. Well, look, Michael, the hour's almost up, and I appreciate you coming on the program today. And you have an email you care to put out there?
Well, people can contact me at why don't you give this number a call? 323-210-9483. That's 323-210-9483, and get in contact, or you can send me an email, Michael G. Steger, that's S-T-E-G-E-R, @gmail.com, MichaelGSteger@gmail.
All righty. Well, Michael, I appreciate it, and we'll be talking in the future.
Appreciate it, John. You have a good day, and Merry Christmas.
Okay, you do the same, sir. Thank you very much. All righty. Michael Steger. I don't know, folks. What do you think? Do you think some fine-tuning here and there? You know, the question that keeps coming into my mind, I'd asked the question before, you know, what was the banker's plan B? As if they didn't realize what they were doing with the banking crisis back in 08 and how the whole thing went down. They were part of it. They were a major part of it, if not all of it. And look what was created. And then we got the government here, well, too big to fail, and there's millions of jobs at stake, and, you know, we can't have the economy collapse. Now, if I was a sitting president at that time, I would have looked at the game board and said, okay, let's dust out pull it out of file and dust off that executive order that Kennedy used to print up federal notes. Let's replace the currency. It'll look kind of the same, a little different verbiage. But it will not be the same because it would not be interest-bearing money. That's where I would have started. But what they've done, crashed the economies, put us on a precipice that with the debt out there, it cannot be repaid. So I'm looking at this scenario and I'm going, you know what? You can try to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear, but if you try to use a dog's ear, good luck. And that's what we're trying to do here. Second hour of the National Intel Report coming up.
So, you love talk radio? Then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24/7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
If you are one of the millions of people who get migraines, you need to know about MigRelief. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist who created MigRelief, the patented dietary supplement that addresses nutritional deficiencies in adults and children with migraines. Thousands of physicians and pharmacists recommend MigRelief.
Call 800-MIG-7354 or visit MIG911.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. because you can handle the truth.